Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What's your preferred milk? Like, do you always get the same type of milk, or do you even?
I never buy milk.
You never buy milk?
I don't buy milk anymore. I don't drink a lot of milk.
Oh.
1%. I would have it would be 1%.
So disappointed.
I've gotten way back into cereal in the last year.
Oh yeah, if I buy cereal, then I can go. I buy milk to go with the cereal, but I very rarely do that.
So if you buy an almond, one, two, whole,
one.
You're a one man.
Yeah, either one or two.
Okay, I go 2% as a kid. I feel whatever you drank as a kid is what you drink.
Yeah,
that's feel like.
I think I drink.
That's how it goes.
Yeah,
and everyone drinks almond milk now.
Yeah,
or oat milk.
It's good.
Oat milk is good. Oat milk is the best. Good.
I had this thing where, like, my boss left for a while, and I took a sip of his milk every day for 3 months.
What?
And then he came back, and it was like, goodbye, chunky lemon milk.
Oh, my God.
Out of paper, out of stock, there's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs, or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and speechwriter for Benito Mussolini, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Jaynes, assistant regional manager.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
But seriously, what's the difference between a salesman and a saleswoman?
Saleswoman has a vagina.
It's a joke, Dwight. It's not a sex ed class.
But I'm right.
Yeah, you're right about the difference between a man and a woman, but not about the punchline of the joke, right? The difference between a salesman and a saleswoman is boobs.
Boobs. Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, discussing the episode, Dwight's Speech, episode 17 of season 2, written by Paul Lieberstein and directed by Charles McDougall, a hardworking TV director. He's done Sex and the City and House of Cards and many, many more. First aired on March 2nd, 2006, viewed by 8.4 million people.
March 06.
Well, that sounds like a great wrap-up, Sean. All right, I think we'll see y'all next week.
Leave us a voicemail.
So we wanted to talk about this episode because it has kind of a narrower focus, or at least for us to focus on one episode from season two will give us like a more confined way to look at the show. We've done some pretty broad-reaching topics the last few weeks. You know, our episode about Andy, our mailbag episode covers all sorts of different grounds in the
five.
Show. Season five. Right, exactly. So for us...
And sometimes we just do an episode.
Yeah, this is an opportunity for us to maybe like get into the more of the fine details and talk about season two... Those storylines are still pretty small, and I think it's going to be fun to kind of dig into this, you know, the early version of The Office before, you know, a lot of things happen in the show. Mm-hmm.
This is still in, like, peak, like, blueprint Office territory in this season.
So, of course, we know Dwight is a great salesman. He's won an award, and he has to give a speech at the ceremony that's going to be honoring him. So, Michael, of course, has won this award before and has done these speeches, so he gets really into
back
it.
Back to back. The two-time.
Yep.
Michael Scott.
Yep.
Yep. Did you guys notice what was in? So, in the episode, it is set up with outside of the football cold open, right, where they're playing football.
Yeah.
It is set up with Dwight getting ready for his speech. And Michael gives some context, talking about how he's won the award back to back twice. And he opens up his little safe in his little closet.
Yeah.
And he shows one plaque and one certificate.
Yeah, they stop.
as reminders of his awards, right? Mm-hmm. Did you guys take a look to see what was in his little safe?
No.
It's like a teacup set or something.
Oh my.
Like maybe they're like drinking glasses or something else like that, but it's like this little tray. Like
I bet that was for his imaginary tea parties as a kid.
And then and on the door, it's just like a picture of Jam, but it's like cut out of a newsletter, like a staff newsletter.
That's, you know what? That's in the in this fun facts thing here on the Dunderpedia.
Okay, yeah.
Shout out to Dunderpedia and everyone who contributes.
Doing great work there.
They pointed that same thing out. It's like it's a staff newsletter announcing the promotion of Jan Gould.
Mm-hmm.
And they were
not
like,
Levinson Gould.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure why. Just Jan Gould.
But yeah, it's so funny that it looked like he cut out like that piece of it so that he could have a picture of her.
Yeah.
In his little office.
Yeah.
Or his little closet. Yeah. Yeah.
So like he had a crush on her before.
No, this is after the client.
This is after.
Oh, it's after. Okay. So maybe he'd put it up.
I like it's like she would never give him a picture of her, so he had to cut one out of the staff directory here. Much like the sleeve he cuts off of Holly's sweater as well.
Right later
oh
on.
Oh my
yeah.
god. That's right.
That should be hanging in his office too.
Of course, Jim pranks Dwight by telling him that he should write his speech based off of great dictator speeches.
Well, he gives him the speech idea, but he gives him the techniques to pound his fist, to wave his arms around.
Yeah.
The overarching sort of thing is that Dwight is insecure about delivering the speech.
Right? Terrified.
Michael is not.
At first he's not.
Right.
At first he's like, this isn't that big. And Michael's like, yes, it is. It's biggest of your life.
Yeah. It's kind of like when D'Angelo in season 7 is like, if I think of it as a meeting, it's no problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And they're like, if I want to have mind control over him.
It's my last day. Yeah. My last week. Can I?
Yeah.
Right. But Michael is being a terrible mentor to Dwight.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're incapable of doing this. Well, it's just because you don't have the skills. So Dwight is trying to prepare for the speech, and then eventually we see him give it.
And of course, and Michael too is really stressing that it needs to be a comedic speech, which of course Dwight's not as good at that.
Well, as Jim says, he's like the great speech givers in history were not joke tellers; they were men of passion.
Yeah,
and he encourages Dwight to play to his strengths, which is actually great advice from Jim. Which
yeah,
is like,
it's supposed
don't
to
try
be
and
a
be
prank,
funny.
But
yeah, don't try and be funny.
He
Dwight.
Says
it really works out for him.
He says, "I majored in public speaking in college, and the first thing they tell you is to be true to yourself, and you are all about authority." And the way that Dwight realizes that and sits back in his chair and he goes, "Yes, yes, I am." Like there's
he rises to it. He's like, "Yes, yes, I am."
So, finally, someone recognizes that he has some sliver of authority.
Yeah.
This early on in the show too, like he's not the Dwight that we know at the end of the show, right? When
right.
we talk about the growth of a character, like this version of Dwight is still like
clueless.
Yeah, it's still changing or growing or evolving into the character that we see eventually.
He's still Michael's pit bull.
I was gonna say Michael as the mentor is something that really stood out to me from this episode. Like Michael is like trying to impart wisdom on someone. You know?
Oh yes.
Like,
well he relishes the fact that he has some expertise.
Yeah. Right, yeah. That, and like it's like him and Ryan are the two people that he's always trying to like give advice to or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm. And Dwight usually laps it up. I mean, like earlier on he does, and then that slowly changes a little bit over time, but even in I'm thinking in like in like beach games when he's like, I hope there will be management parables.
Right.
He's still like that's early season Dwight who's still like thinking Michael has a lot of stuff to offer him.
Yeah,
which isn't really true, but Michael certainly doesn't care, and Dwight's just all about authority, like you said.
Or in like season 3, where they're waiting outside of David Wallace's house, and they're like, "All right, favorite moments in Dunder Mifflin history," and I don't know if I'm going to get them all, but Dwight says like, "My first sales call, our basketball game."
Yeah, that's exactly how
he
says it.
when I first started, and you hazed me by spaying me with the fire extinguisher, and they laugh about that, and then he's like. Or that moment that you told me that when I went to the hospital and you told me that you cared about me. Michael's like, oh, okay.
Which is so funny,
he pivots
too.
Pivots out of that conversation,
Which is so funny, too, because Michael was not very caring when they were at the hospital.
Not at all. So, okay, after Jim sets up Dwight with his ideas and he's like, you need to do this, Dwight sort of takes it to heart. Michael relives some of his glory days. Mm-hmm. The other storyline in this episode.
It's Pam planning her wedding.
Right.
So and the thermostat.
Yeah. Right, and the thermostat is our C storyline.
We'll get to that.
But the B storyline is that Pam is planning her wedding, and as a result of that,
Roy.
Right, and Jim is beginning to plan a trip, kind of as his, like, I'm going to run away from this entire moment.
Yes.
When Phyllis comes over and starts talking about her wedding, Jim is like, I got to get back to work. Like, he says it out loud, like, I got to get back, right?
And you see Pam realize it, too. Pam glances over Phyllis's shoulder at Jim, like, well, I'll tell you later. And then later she's on the phone talking with her parents about invitations. She doesn't want them to be orange.
Yeah.
And she turns again. She makes eye contact with Jim and then slowly turns around. Mm-hmm. So she's like very cognizant that Jim is into her and doesn't want to be around this wedding at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's an unspoken thing.
Yeah. And Jenna Fischer, as I've said many times on this show, she's just so good at those nonverbal looks and those moments of conveying just how much she feels for Jim, but she can't do
yeah.
anything.
And we're only a handful of episodes away from Casino Night, so, mm-hmm. yeah. you know, versus something earlier in the show, like, it's building to a head.
Yeah.
Like, that yeah. their relationship dynamic is about to have this moment where Jim finally, you know, tells her how he feels. Warning.
Warning. Warning.
Yeah, Jim.
You think that I would let this happen? No way, Jose.
Yeah, Jim doesn't want to attend Roy and Pam's wedding, so he's planning a trip, and he ends up booking a trip to Australia during their wedding.
And all the while, the whole office seems very skeptical that Jim's actually going to go on a trip.
Like, yeah, everyone has that. Yeah. Like,
Ryan,
oh, really?
Ryan is...
You're really going to go on that trip?
Ryan is savage in this episode, first of all.
Send me a postcard.
Yeah,
he
yeah. He's like, knowing Jim, he will probably have a great summer
great
in
weekend
Philly.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Jim has worked at the same job for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Jim eats the same ham and cheese sandwich every day. If I was a betting man, I would say Jim has a fun weekend in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Ryan, also this episode, Kelly is hinting to Ryan that she wants to get married, and Ryan's like, no, I never plan on getting married. And like, Kelly gets up and leaves, and Pam's like, that was really mean.
You should be more sensitive, right?
Yeah. He just goes, I know what I said.
He's cold.
Yeah.
He's cold.
There's a great moment in season 3 in when Jim is going to prank Andy with his phone.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably The Return, right?
It or is when, The Return, yeah,
it is.
When Andy, yeah. And he goes to Ryan, he's like, hey, Ryan, do you want to like play a prank on Andy? He goes, I would love to if I was, you know, if it was 10 years ago or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That. And then Jim says, I liked you better as the temp. And Ryan goes, yeah, me too. Such a funny line. Good. Yeah, I love
so
that.
Great.
Like,
yeah.
Ryan is the temp.
I
yeah.
can't right now, but I asked me 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Me too.
Yeah, I love that he acknowledges it. Like, that's it's such a
yep.
funny, yeah self-aware thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, good. Anyway, that whole kind of the wedding thing going on, it does provide a lot of kindling for what is about to come with their relationship. It builds the tension. I mean, that's one of the special things about season 2, right? Mm-hmm. Is the Jim and Pam tension is just
very real. Yeah.
It never
yeah.
gets to that point again because you can't, but that's like such a selling point of the show for so many people.
Right.
Is their relationship, and it's just at its peak right about now.
Mm-hmm.
I think too it sets Jim files a complaint to Toby about it, which comes up in the conflict yeah. resolution episode later, little bit later, and then the fact that Jim is talking is going through this, it gives them something to talk about when Michael pulls them together for Toastmasters. So there are a couple things that Michael does for Dwight to practice, right?
Yes.
He has Dwight go out and they give news to the larger group. Michael goes out and says, you know, you had a great quarter, everyone's getting $1,000 bonus. Then they walk back in, and Dwight's like, that's great news about the bonuses. He's like, oh, yeah, I made that up. And he's like, just go out there and say something. And
attention,
he's like,
hey, there's been an accident on 84 West.
Yeah. Multiple cars have skidded off the road.
Yeah, yeah. There's broken glass everywhere.
Is there anyone that we know in the that was
Brad
affected?
Pitt.
Is he okay? He will
never act again.
Kelly?
Also,
Kelly
there will be no bonuses.
Yeah. When he says Brad Pitt, Kelly's arms just drop to her side. She's just staring at Dwight. It's such a funny background moment.
How does this affect our bonuses? They are not related.
Touch it, everyone.
According to Paul Lieberstein, who wrote this episode, Jim never did go on that Australian vacation. He canceled it.
Was it supposed to be Australian?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Australian, right. Mate.
Yeah, that's what he says to Pam. He says to Pam at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to go to
Australia. Dingo babies.
Yeah, taking a page from Dwight's book, who wanted, of course, to go to
New Zealand.
That's what he says. So Jim says to Dwight, if you can go anywhere in the world, where would you go? And Dwight, I think he's staring at his bobblehead.
I can go anywhere in the world, and I will go to New Zealand. And what is it?
Hike the Lord of the Rings trail to Mordor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then at the end... And then at the end when Pam's like, Australia, that sounds amazing, and Jim says, yeah, I'm gonna have to avoid Dwight on his connecting flight to Mordor. But,
okay, yeah, you
know. Easy to forget how prominent Lord of the Rings was at the time.
Yeah, sure.
You know, in the years that preceded
big deal
that show, you know,
Dwight would have been way into it.
Mm-hmm.
And is
just like he's into that and Battlestar Galactica, you know.
Oh yeah,
it is a nice little touch that he says, "I can travel anywhere,
and I will."
If you could go anywhere, where would you go?
Yeah,
I can.
Yeah. Right, then implying as if the question implies that he couldn't. Yeah,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
That's really nice. But anyway, as we get closer then to back to that Toastmasters scene, yeah, Jim goes up in front of everyone, is just taking suggestions from people,
right?
And it's and then Well, then he calls a travel agent, which is really dates the show.
Right.
Can I talk to one of your travel agents, please?
Yeah,
you know,
no
where
kidding.
Where do you want to go? I don't know.
No kidding.
And all the while that's going on is we have this little thermostat war going on
right.
between members of the office as well as the C storyline. Which is, Edwin, you've brought this up. That's just a very unique little thing that happens in this episode that happens less as the show goes on.
It's like in season... Yes, the fact that they give time to the characters talking about how the different temperature they like the thermostat at is so different from the like very like the storylines later seasons that have much bigger implications
like,
on their lives.
Yeah,
I'm specifically thinking about just as an example, Oscar dressed as the dinosaur, the Electoral College in season 9, where the camera catches him, you know, kissing the senator. Right, like think about how different that is. Oscar's in a costume, kissing a political figure who's dating another, the woman who sits right next to him.
And then later he's like raising a child with Angela. That's a sub story.
And then like, you know, 8 years prior, he's like, I like it at 66.
Yeah.
You know, like there's
I'm more productive.
There's something to be said about like, you know, the show is focusing on, you know, that's part of what led us to this episode as like a topic. And it's just nice to see the show in this early incarnation focus on the really small things.
When
like,
the stakes are small and it takes its time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also like we as the audience are getting to know the characters, but it's just as prevalent that the show is getting to know its characters too a little bit. The way like the way they write this, because at some point you could like let's write a scene with these three arguing over the thermostat. Okay, who would like it colder? Well, probably Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
What would Kevin do? He probably said it at 69 degrees. You know,
yeah, right. We don't. Yeah, exactly. We don't know that much about Kevin at that point.
But yeah, this is like, and you get that smile when Kevin's like, "I set it to 69," and he gives that grin, and that's that feels like a branch off to me. It's like, okay, Kevin's gonna be like this.
Yeah.
And Oscar says, "I like it at 66," and if people don't like it, I don't care.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, well, Oscar is that.
Oscar's
like, and so we start to sort of parse out the characters, and it's because of these small, almost insignificant issues that we're able to kind of explore their nuances.
I feel like in a lot of shows, and maybe this is painting with too broad a brush, but I feel like the first couple seasons you learn who the characters are. And then in a lot of seasons that follow, depending on how long a show goes, like you get it, you're just watching the characters be themselves.
Yeah. Right.
You know? And early on in The Office, we are just seeing the characters interacting in a very relatable environment. It's literally an average American workplace, right?
Well,
And that's what one of the things that I miss about those early seasons, that it's just like they're real problems that, you know, to any of us. I mean, if we were in an office and we were kind of competing with the people who work there over the thermostat, that'd be a real it'd be a real issue. You'd be like, God damn it, someone changed it again.
That's the stuff you take home with you and you're like complaining to your partner about or whoever.
Yeah,
you know,
that's real world stuff. So that's I really miss these types of storylines. Mm-hmm. As the show goes on.
And another one that kind of reminds me of is in season 1 where Dwight has the water cooler and he's like, you know, 80% of office gossip happens at the water cooler, which is unfortunate for me because I bring my own water to work and he's that giant chug. And then it just cuts to the water cooler next to his desk. And I was like, what's going on? What's the scuttlebutt? And they're like, why did you do this?
That's a perfect example, too. It occurred to me the other day, too. I was like, how much editing is used to make jokes in The Office and how that's not common with sitcoms. So that's a great example of how they use editing to kind of like make the joke.
The drop at the start of this episode with he tells the joke, the difference is boobs.
Yeah.
Like they cut after boobs. Like you don't get Dwight's reaction. You don't see anyone else. And it's only funny because they cut it right there.
Yeah. It was boobs.
Yeah.
In a lot of other sitcoms that are multicam sitcoms where the set is flat and it's very traditional, right? With the laugh track and stuff. It's like setup, joke.
Yep.
Joke. Like retort, you know, like retaliation, you know, there's a music to it that's very natural and familiar, right?
Yeah.
And with The Office, you don't get nearly as much of that. Like you get these moments, like to your point, that are like told by editing or something like that, or like when I'm thinking of in The Alliance in season 1 where they just cut to Dwight with his hair bleached, Yeah. You know, like, yeah, that's the joke.
Yeah.
Like, they're talking about whether or not they can get him to dye his hair, and then it, like, cuts to, and he's like, did I throw Jim under the bus? And he's like, yeah, has the dyed hair. Right. Yeah.
Or you get the voiceover first.
Yeah.
You hear him speaking, and then we see him. Yeah, that's really great.
That happens with Michael hiding behind his door when Andy's looking for him. Same episode, too, we get the shot of, in the return, you get the shot of Angela and Michael both missing Dwight for different reasons, but they're eating in the break room, and they're way at the back, and the camera's in the annex or something, and it's this long shot of them just sitting in silence, you know, just being like, tough day. Like, that's it.
There's a great, when you're talking about like editing, and like I thought of this too in the later seasons. Part of the reason I find myself going back to those later seasons is because they tell jokes in different ways. They're often a lot more broad, and I'm thinking specifically of when Dwight is trying to assemble his team for the special project in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. He's like, I have no need for like lazy, like, you know, people who are like slackers. Like he lists three things, and then like he's walking around, and he goes, and what's your name again? She goes, Kathy. He goes, and Kathy.
Yeah. Right?
Like, it's this combination of like voiceover and editing to tell the joke.
It's but almost it, like, as if we're hearing it straight from his head.
Right.
Like in that moment. But
Or think about in the first episode of season 8, where it's like Joe Bennett selected Robert California, who came in, and like it's just voiceover of Robert coming in. It's like, and took one look around, Phyllis sneezes.
Yeah.
And drove down to Florida.
That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we like that's a really great point that like the show is very creative over the course of all nine seasons in terms of editing and stuff. But I think that's one of the signatures of the early seasons is how well like a show that's dry with no laugh track and in season one has very muted colors, like it's very pale.
Totally.
Right? Like the jokes come through in cuts and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, back to Dwight's speech.
Now that the temperature's right. Mm-hmm.
So of course they
cleaning out the microwave. That was the other story I was thinking of. It's like a really good, just mellow office story.
They take off to the ceremony at the hotel. They walk in and there's like the lights are going.
Y'all ready for this?
Yeah. And so it's like,
I don't remember it being this big.
Yeah, right.
Could have put it. That's what she said there.
Yeah, right.
But he didn't.
So Dwight, of course, is freaking out.
Northeast Pennsylvania Sales
Association
conference. So it like,
NESA.
Yep.
Wow.
I can't. Just like the light show that was going on for that.
Yeah,
man.
And then they call up Dwight. Michael goes up in his stead. Delivers some
Dwight
really
locks up. Just completely freezes.
Completely.
Like heavy breathing and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So they just allow Michael to go up and tell jokes for like 8 minutes.
In the Toastmasters thing, they say, all right, Dwight, show them what you learned. And he gets up and goes, good morning, Vietnam, right? And all of them just go, ugh, in the conference room, right?
Yeah.
And then when Michael gets up, he does the exact same thing. That's his opening line.
Yeah.
And there's no response, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And then he just does these freestanding, he does these words on excellence. Right?
Well, another great edit there is it starts and he just goes, what's the difference between a salesman and a saleswoman?
Cut.
In front of everybody.
I thought that was a good little precursor to at Jim and Pam's wedding when he gets up and they're like, Michael, I thought we'd agreed you weren't giving a toast, right?
Yeah.
And then he gets up and he's like, I'm not giving a toast, just doing a little freestanding comedy. Uh-huh. He's like, what's the deal with the smart car, right? Like,
I'm so smart.
Yeah, right. Everyone can laugh. It doesn't just have to be the idiots. But yeah, and then like, what do we see from Michael? We see it cuts back to him and he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were wearing a hearing aid. I thought you were just speaking abnormally.
Really sweaty.
Yeah.
Grease just panicking up there.
And then he does the Michael Winslow impressions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. From Police Academy.
Whoop.
Car starting.
I love too the when Dwight finally works up the courage to go up and as they pass each other and that moment of Michael's just like that is a tough good luck. That is a tough crowd.
Yeah.
And just the energy of that moment is just so good. And then we get to Dwight's speech.
Then we get to Dwight's speech. This is just such an amazing speech. Blood alone moves the wheels of history. Have you ever asked yourselves in an hour of meditation, which everyone finds during the day? Like that even right there is, what is he talking about? How long have we been striving for greatness? Not only the years we've been at war, the war of work, but from the moment as a child when we realized that the world could be conquered.
So I I wanted to find out, like, is this all from one speech, different speeches?
Yeah.
Like, when did Mussolini actually give this speech? Did you look any of that up?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you were.
Oh, sorry.
You're about to say it.
No, no. I mean, I don't know. Do you guys know if these are actual lines from?
Yes.
They are?
Yes. So, The Blood Alone Moves the Wheels of History is a speech Mussolini gave in December 1914 in Parma, Italy, advocating, that was, it was a speech advocating that Italy go into World War One.
Okay.
And the other two lines are just basically a speech he's saying that Italy's going to win World War II.
Yeah.
And then the next one is them declaring war in the United States.
Hmm.
So those are sort of the three different conflicts that Mussolini gave these actual speeches about.
Yeah.
For those
okay.
Moments.
That makes a lot more sense. I wasn't sure if we were supposed to think that he just wrote this.
I was assuming they were just Mussolini speeches.
Those are real.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And Dwight does a, you know.
Well, when he
commits,
the first thing he does is bang his fists, and there's a cut to the audience where a lot of them like sit up really straight in their chairs, like they're like, "Oh, like we've got something here." Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
they've been putting up with Michael for 15
just doing
minutes,
impressions. Yeah,
yeah.
It is too bad that Michael kind of runs out on Dwight. Like, we understand why Michael's feeling pretty. He just bombed, right?
Yeah,
in front of all these people,
and Dwight's able to stir them up so quickly,
and he had such self-esteem about how he had crushed, you know.
Yeah.
They were like, Dwight says, "Do you have copies of the speeches you gave?" And he says, "Yes." And he says, "Can I see them?" And Michael says, "No, they would remember." And then he just jumps into something else. Like, they would remember a speech from like 7 years ago. That,
yeah.
Like,
no.
It is really weird that he leaves. Like, he's not even happy for Dwight. Like, you think he would sit there and be like, good, but he must be so ashamed of how badly he just did.
Yeah.
He just wants to get out of the room.
Yeah.
If that was a taping for his comedy special, Here I Go Again,
Yeah.
It would be difficult for them to, come back from that,
Yeah.
Because he goes straight to the bar.
Right.
It's not like he,
Where he sees the woman who doesn't have her ID.
Do you think he's making up that story?
I don't think he made it up.
I don't think he's smooth enough to make it up.
Interesting story.
Yeah. That's the reason why I thought he might have made it up. But he like can't. He's like trying to find a punchline in anything.
Yeah.
She's probably back up there drinking from the minibar. Right?
Yeah.
But I do love watching Dwight command the room. That's such a, it's such a like, great moment to see for a character who is so like he's pranked by Jim. Michael is putting him down all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't get a lot of victories in the first couple seasons. And it doesn't affect Dwight because Dwight is so confident and so undeterred by all these things.
Yeah.
And he's so intense and competitive, right?
Victories never have to do with people liking him.
Right, yeah. That's true, yeah.
You know?
And, like, he's all about authority, right?
Yeah.
So it's great to see people respond to him. And then at the end, he's like, ha, 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 right? He's, like, laughing.
See him feeling
like,
it.
Yeah,
right?
he's
pumping his fists and stuff. Yeah. It's great to see him get that moment of victory.
I am Haking.
It's like watching...
Hello! Yeah. Welcome to Hay Place, a place for hay. Excuse me, get off of there. Those are show bales, not play bales.
I feel like you're watching Dwight, who he's realizing he could have been a real dictator.
Yeah.
Like Dwight is the exact, Dwight could have probably.
I have commanded vast virtual armies.
Vast virtual armies.
But then at the end, of course, you get the bit of Michael of like, I captivated the man who captivated 1,000 guys. 1,000 guys.
Imagine that, yeah.
Imagine that. But again, it's another classic kind of season two ending, or at least that scene where you sort of just get the shot of them talking at the bar together.
Right.
And it kind of pans back a little bit, and there's a voiceover, and you just see them laughing together at the bar.
Yeah.
And Michael at least regains the whatever amount of confidence he needs again.
Yeah.
Which is just like, okay, I still at least can entertain Dwight. That's really what I care about, that Dwight looks up to me. And he reestablishes that by the end of the episode, and it's kind of resets everything at the end.
Yeah.
They're so codependent in the early
seasons.
Yeah, that's what you learn in the
end. We see them go back to each other. Like, even though Dwight, like, is put down by Michael so much, like, Michael makes him laugh, you know? Like, Michael makes him feel like, you know, they're doing something cool or something funny or whatever it is.
But that we're also reminded that Michael needs Dwight. Because if he doesn't have Dwight, then he has nobody to listen to.
No friends.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's I think this is a great episode. I found this one is, like, I feel like I haven't seen it that much in the context of season two. It just sort of, maybe it's because it's episode 17 and I just gloss over it, but nice to revisit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love the football cold open. Where they're throwing the football around.
Yeah. Let's hold on that. Oh, yeah, I got some trivia questions about that. Okay, so we'll hold on that.
I love that Dwight is thinking about getting
either.
They
could say yes. They could say no.
Football going back and forth.
I love that Dwight is trying to decide between a TiVo or a DVD burner.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What a timestamp for the show.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And then
what was
second
place prize? Pizza?
He's
loaf of bread?
Yeah, loaf of
tasty
bread.
Ninth, place. Ninth place. Yeah.
A loaf of bread.
Oh, tasty, delicious pizza. Hey, does that pizza play DVDs?
Speaking of potential to be a dictator, he thinks that a prize is a loaf of bread. Yeah, here you are to the peasants. Yeah. I love Dwight with the grapes. Michael comes in.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Grapes, seductive.
Seduction.
And then later he says, absolutely. Nailed the joke. It's only a matter of time. Yeah. Dwight is just leaning back in his chair eating grapes off of the bunch.
Eating himself grapes like
feeling himself.
He's in a Greek painting or something like that. Uh-huh.
So does that mean Jim got ninth at Dunder Mifflin?
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But there are a lot of other good salesmen at Dunder Mifflin. Karen Filippelli, Harry Janarone.
Todd Packer.
Yeah, Todd Packer. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm surprised Todd Packer wasn't in this episode. Mm-hmm. Seems like he could have been at the bar there.
Oh, yeah.
Nerds.
Just a couple other little things from this episode. I love in the Toastmasters segment, we learn a little bit more about Toby, who went to Amsterdam after his divorce.
It's and a great Toby moment.
And it's like, how long were you there? And he's like, a few weeks or months or...
I don't really.
Yeah. And Creed gets up and he's like, Jimmy, listen to me. You don't want to go to Amsterdam. He doesn't say why. And he's like, I would say you should go to Hong Kong.
Yep.
And then they get that talking head of Creed saying hello to his friends in China. So, and then Kevin, you should go to hedonism. It's like Club Med, but everyone's naked.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Let's see.
Oh, and they make thank you, Toby, but that was not a toast. And he's like, to Amsterdam.
To Amsterdam.
I was there for a week, maybe a month. I don't really know.
Bam, I am public speaking. Stop public interrupting me.
Well, I went to Amsterdam, and then Jim's like, oh, why'd you go there? And he's like, it was after my divorce. Like, he didn't want to remember why he went.
Right.
Yeah.
It's such a sad little moment.
Right. That's right.
Anyway, anything else?
I guess that line where Dwight says at one point that he lost a spelling bee to Raj Patel and he misspelled the word failure. Improvised line by Rainn Wilson.
Oh, that's really funny.
You could see that in the talking head. Yeah. He looks like he's about to break the whole line.
The word was failure.
It's sticking time. My trivia has been lit on fire. It's hard to do the trivia from the episode because... We talk about the whole episode.
Michael says to Dwight, all right, Dwight, it's time. The Grim Reaper is here.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
And I love, too, that we never see what temperature Creed likes it at. They just see him going and adjusting it.
And Angela. We see her adjusting, too. We don't see that. What do you think? Do you think... Where's Creed setting the thermostat? He's either going way hot or way cold. Right?
I bet he's turning it up hot.
I think because he's homeless or he lives in the quarry, he's probably... 72, he's getting it up high.
To be fair, he lives by the quarry.
Yeah.
I think he lives in the quarry.
He throws things down there. Yeah. I would just guess cold because I'm assuming Angela likes it really warm. Because
Angela likes it cold.
She's teeny tiny.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right.
But I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think that's it for this episode. We've mined quite a bit of what there is.
It's a nice little episode.
It's just a nice little episode.
Yeah,
it's
Slice of Life, season two.
Dwight and Michael's friendship.
Yeah.
Stressing about Jim and Pam.
Small plot lines.
Yeah.
I feel like most of our episodes we've done, we've picked pretty large two-parters.
Yeah, this doesn't really have, besides the Jim and Pam stuff, this doesn't have, like, it could almost be anywhere. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, like, with Dwight and Michael talking at the bar, it resets the episode. So by the next episode, it's like...
Right.
Blank slate again.
Right.
You know, one thing we learn is that Roy has a connection at the VA and that it's nicer than you think. All he had to do was pick a date. He was going to get a DJ or a band.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And all he's done is pick a date.
It's time for some trivia.
No, it is not.
It's time for
some... Let's do a voicemail. How about that?
Oh, voicemail.
Let's do a voicemail.
Hells yeah.
Please leave a message. For Andy Bernard.
All right, we're going to fire here through two voicemails. One is just a funny observation we wanted to share from a listener in Miami.
Hey, this is Luciano from Miami. I just started listening to the podcast, so like I'm on episode 4 right now. Get ready for a ton of these. First things first.
Can't wait.
Season 2, Roy and Daryl are talking about fantasy football.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them has traded Sean Alexander, which, if I remember correctly, is the year after the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl. He broke the single-season touchdown record the year before, trades him the following year, and he's like, I can't believe you traded him. And Daryl says, I needed defense. As a football player, that is atrocious. And really, it made it okay for Pam to leave Roy.
That's a great take.
I love that. Yeah,
that's funny.
For fantasy football players out there, that's a good one.
Good thing he was set on kickers, you know, he didn't need one of those.
I know. In fantasy football, like a defense is like you would never trade a really good running back for a defense.
Yeah.
So that is a funny catch that it's just like
that he's really bad at
fantasy football. Yeah, that's okay.
Or it's just like maybe the person who wrote that episode doesn't.
Yeah,
they don't play enough fantasy football.
Or their defense scoring is way different.
That's so funny.
There's one other time I feel like fantasy football is called out in the office, and it's when Jim is in Stanford and he calls back and he gets Pam. And he was going to try to get Kevin, but I guess like Kevin was gone, so his extension didn't work.
Because they're still doing fantasy football.
He was like, yeah, it's some fantasy football thing. A nice moment where, like, I know that you talk about, like, these moments where, like, at the end of the show, where it's like, what do you know, they're all friends? It's like, it's kind of fun or in the early seasons to, like, find them relating to each other and things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, an office fantasy football thing.
Because everybody's got that.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you, Luciano.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Please keep sending them,
Yeah, we're going to be getting a lot of voicemails in these next episodes.
Hey, that's
awesome.
That's exactly what we
slide into our VMs.
Ooh.
All right, let's go from Miami to Tennessee.
Hey, guys, this is Jamie. I'm from Tennessee. And one episode that really intrigued me was recasting The Office. So I kind of got to work on mine as soon as I finished the episode. And here's what I came up with. Now, majority of these cast members would be if they were cast right now.
Okay.
Some of them have the caveat of they would be from a different year period, and I have included that year after I say their name.
Yeah, that's good.
So in no particular order, Paul Rudd as Michael Scott, Eden Schur as Pam, Brian Posehn as Kevin, as Dwight, Michael Pena as Oscar.
Yeah.
Tara Buono as Jan. Tom Holland as Jim. Charlie McDermott as Ryan. Kenan Thompson as Stanley.
Love that one.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rule as Toby. Melissa Joan Hart, circa 2005, as Angela.
Nice.
Forrest Leachman, circa 2009 or 10, as Creed. Ollie Shannon as Meredith.
Yeah.
Jack Black, circa 2000, as Andy.
Oh.
Ryan Bialik as Phyllis. And Keegan Michael Key as Daryl. What do you guys think about that cast? And who would you put as Kelly in that cast? Again, enjoying the show. Keep it up. Hope you guys have a great day.
Thanks, man. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Jack Black as Andy is the
inspired.
That's a really
that's
good
one
pick.
That I'm kind of bummed I didn't get myself, but very good. Very good casting, sir.
Yeah. At first I was like Paul Rudd as Michael, and then I could see
he could do it.
I could see it. It'd be a very different character, but
it'd be totally different. But they kind of look alike almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, he would almost be more of an Andy type manager.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like he's more of a nice guy.
Because he has to be so nice and a pushover. That's, I think, how he would play that.
Yeah.
And he doesn't quite have the same. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it would work.
I think that could work. Mm-hmm. For Kelly, I don't know. He had a lot of SNL people in there.
Yeah.
I thought of Jenny Slate. That's the first person.
Jenny Slate's a good one.
Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
Can kind of go with any cast.
Yeah.
For sure. Love Cloris Leachman.
Yeah. Keegan-Michael Key is Daryl.
Getting
him in there. Gosh, Keegan-Michael Key could be Jim, too.
Yeah.
That's true.
Honestly,
yeah.
He's we know him as a very, like, out there performer, right? And from Key and Peele and stuff. Yeah. But like when he does play more subdued characters, he's very good.
Yeah, Friends from college.
Even in some Key and Peele sketches when he plays like
the straight.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You could, I mean, I feel like you could, in The Warehouse, like we said, you could have a few. Like having Key and Peele in The Warehouse before the show. That would have been so great.
That would have been awesome.
And like a few other people down Jordan there. Brian
Peele
Posehn.
Jordan Peele is Lonnie.
Yeah, totally. Great, yeah. Brian Posehn is Kevin is really good.
Oh, yeah.
He'd also be a great warehouse worker, Brian Posehn, just like a big guy in the back with a beard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like every now and then gets one line every season. Yeah, anyway, that was great. Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Jamie.
Guys, if you ever have these, I know we have one other
We have another alternate casting that someone did send us on Instagram, so we'll bring that up another time. But I think that it's something that we can always return to is alternate castings. I think that's always fun to discuss.
We should start nailing up our favorite picks and have a crowdsource. Like, pick one from everyone. This one, I think we got to take Jack Black as Andy.
That's is great. Fantastic.
It's really
fantastic.
Good call. All righty. Well, now...
Conference room.
Conference.
5 minutes.
Okay, everybody, listen up. If you are not in that conference room in 2 minutes, I am going to kill you.
All right, this we're taking this conference room. We're taking this from conference room 5 minutes. 10 illustrated essays about The Office. This is, of course, written by Shea Serrano, who's written several bestsellers, movies, and other things.
Basketball and other things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. New York Times bestseller. You can hear him on Ringer Pod. He's got With the Pencil, his podcast on The Ringer. Illustrated by Arturo Toros, of course. They are a great team and a huge fan of their work. So
very true.
Shout out to them. He has a chapter, meeting five, in this book, which is called The Olympiad. And this is basically he's just asking some conversational question you could have about The Office and awarding a third, second, and first place answer. So we're just going to do one of these and discuss it. The question is this. Which scene from The Office that we know for sure happened but never actually got to see would be the most fulfilling to watch?
Hmm.
So what would be the most fulfilling to watch? Do you want to give our answers and then hear his? Or
I think that's better. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, on last week's episode...
Give us some picks.
I was talking about Andy at Anger Management. I would have loved to have seen
Oh!
That's great, yeah.
Oh.
Because he actually
did... graduating?
I mean, I think he really enjoyed it. He says at one point, like, to Aaron, like, oh, yeah, I'd love for you to meet the guys. Like, mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think I'd be interested to see that because I think he really changed during it. Mm. That one's just right off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. I've got a couple. I think the most fulfilling would have to be Michael interacting with his kids. Like, that's the one, or Michael getting married. Like, those big milestone moments in Michael's life that presumably happen off screen because we don't see him until the finale, where he says that he has so many, you know, he has two phones for all the pictures of his kids, right?
Yeah.
And, like, it's just like it would be kind of a callback to or a fulfillment of Michael interacting with all the babies, you know?
Uh-huh.
Where he's like, I feel like they know that I'm one of them, you know?
Such a great
He's like
montage.
Holding the baby and he's pointing out into space. Yeah, exactly, right? Or the Halloween episode when he does the trick or treating, right?
Yeah.
And he's giving out the candy to all the kids at the end or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or he's playing with Sasha, Toby's daughter, and Take Your Daughter to Workday, right? Like all these, or I guess in a different way, a little kid lover.
Yeah.
maybe it's not that heartwarming with that moment. But just to think that like Michael in his marriage to Holly, like he's found someone, and then like to see Michael with kids would be amazing.
Yeah.
The other one, number two, just as a laughs thing, I would love to see more of Dwight with Knights of the Night.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, for sure.
And
sure.
Also in that, the episode where they convinced Dwight that it's I think it's Performance Review in season 2 where they convinced Dwight that it's Friday instead of Thursday.
Yeah.
I went drinking with my laser tag team last night.
Yeah.
Never do that on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And it's like I would have loved to see Dwight interacting with his laser tag team.
That's good.
Yeah.
Just a quick shot of him tactically moving in the
dark. Do you have any?
The problem with this is I'm thinking of funny ones, but I'm trying to think like what would actually be the most fulfilling to see. I think you touched on anything with Michael and Holly. With their relationship is
what are the funny ones
the
do you...
I think you mentioned Andy going to Anger Management. I just thought it'd be funny to see him go checking in with like a bandage on his hand I would have liked to have seen maybe Oscar one day of his vacation when he gets to go. And then I would have also really liked to have seen Toby's hang gliding accident on the zip line.
Yeah.
See the accident, but like him really excited being in Costa Rica, getting strapped in, and then it cuts to the hospital bed. Because I'd like to see It would have been funny to have to actually see Toby really happy.
Yeah,
and like
for
in,
one
in Costa Rica, and like, and then suddenly he's in the neck brace. As a Toby lover, that would be fulfilling for me. Yeah. Anything else?
No. Let's go to Shay.
So here's what Shay said with this.
I hope it's different from ours.
He gives out. He calls this the chapter of the Olympiad. So he's giving out a bronze, but really blue yogurt lid, a silver yogurt lid, and a gold for first place. So his bronze, his third place answer is Jim's last day in the office before leaving for Stanford after Pam rejected him. How did it go? Did Jim make a show of it? Did he go quietly? Was Pam there? What did Michael say? Oh my God, what did Dwight say? Did the two of them ever share a surprisingly tender moment? Did Dwight dance on Jim's grave? Did anyone sniff that out? Did it was because of Pam?
Huh.
So seeing Jim say goodbye to everyone before he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
The silver yogurt lid. I love this answer. Meredith graduating from graduate school and earning her PhD.
Right.
She mentions in the very last episode of the series that she'd been getting her PhD while the documentary crew was filming, but never made it onto the show. I'd have liked to seen her walk across the stage. It'd have been neat. And the gold yogurt lid, Michael and Ollie's wedding.
Did
the other people from the office show up? Did Michael and Holly write their own vows? If so, did they do them in a Yoda voice? Who was Michael's best man? Did Michael give a toast and probably nail it? Can you even imagine how broken up we would have all been when Holly came walking down the aisle and Michael is standing there at the altar waiting for her, just crying and crying and crying?
Oh, yeah. That would have been wonderful.
The intense scene.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, that's from Shay Serrano's illustrated book called Conference Room.
Nice.
5 minutes, 10 essays about The Office. It's fantastic.
That's great.
Go get it. Support his work. He's fantastic. Big shout out to Shay Serrano.
Time for some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
You've thrown to it a couple times, but I think Alex has mentioned that we've destroyed his trivia with the...
Oh, it's true. Yeah, it's been destroyed, but you know what? Let's pick through the remains and see if there's any meat on the bone.
Pick through the bones. Yeah.
So we talked about Jim getting ninth place. What was Jim's actual prize?
Gino's Pizza.
Gino's Pizza. Very good. I was going to ask who he lost in the spelling bee to.
Raj Patel.
Spelling failure. That's good. What interstate did the accident happen on?
84 West.
84 West.
You said that one.
I did.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask, what are all the suggestions in this episode that Jim gets for vacation spots?
Oh.
Where from? What is the suggestion and who's it from? Okay. You've already got four of them. There's one you didn't get yet.
Toby in Amsterdam.
Toby says Amsterdam.
Creed says Hong Kong.
Yes.
Kevin says hedonism.
Yes.
Who else is there? Kelly or somebody? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. There's two more. You already said, I mean, Dwight says New Zealand.
Oh, Philadelphia with Ryan?
Okay. Yeah. No. Oh. No, there's one more. It's Oscar.
I don't know. Who is it? Paris?
Oscar offers his timeshare in Key West.
Oh, yeah.
Key West.
That would be a good trip.
And Michael does an impression of who?
Oh, Michael Winslow.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So, nothing. Oh, okay, here we go. So, this is from the football cold open.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I was going to have you, like, who's the order of it goes to, but that's actually not that interesting. So, but three people hit the floor during this.
Oh,
three people end up on the floor during the football scene. Who are those three people? Four people.
Angela?
No.
Ryan?
Yes.
Creed?
Yes.
Stanley. He crushes Stanley. Stanley falls back into Angela. Yeah.
Yep. Stanley?
Mm-hmm. Stanley, Ryan, Creed. There's one more.
Dwight.
Oh, Dwight.
Who does the hitting. Yeah.
Got it.
So those are the four. I really quickly want to break down this play that happens here. So Michael and Dwight are passing back and forth. Jim intercepts Michael's pass. Great interception. Quick lateral to Phyllis. Right? Phyllis laterals to Creed.
Yeah.
Creed, little handoff to Ryan. Great handoff.
Yeah.
Bam. Dwight has not given up on the play. The defense or the offense becoming the defense. Dwight stays with it. Hammers Ryan to the ground, recovers the fumble, runs another 10 yards, cannot be brought down by anyone. He runs through Stanley, runs through Creed, and eventually hikes the ball back to Michael.
Pam! That's the last one. Yeah.
Another great editing cut. Yeah. Anyway, that's the whole anatomy of that football play. So.
Oh, I loved that play-by-play.
Michael's got great hands, by the way. Mm-hmm. He makes a couple of good catches because Kevin throws a laser at Michael.
Yeah.
Once he throws it at Kevin and all the papers fall, and Kevin's clearly pissed and just rifles it at Michael, and he just goes, "Nice catch."
I'm also thinking about when Michael comes back in the healthcare episode, and he's like, "Ice cream sandwiches," and he throws one to Kevin. It's like way too high.
Yeah.
Pow! Yeah.
Anyway, that was the smoldering remains of trivia. Great. There you go.
Thank you.
Oh, a fulfilling scene, Michael in his weekly pickup basketball game. Like, who are the other people that he plays with that he, like, feels so confident about his game?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you guys, thank you so much for listening. And please hit us up if you have any questions or comments or if you think we missed anything or we got something wrong.
Or got something right.
Or if we got something right, we like to a little pat on the back every once in a while, too.
Doesn't hurt you.
Call us, 503-694-9314. We have an email address, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter, @MichaelScottPod. And we have a website, michaelscottpod.com. Very special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and designs all our artwork, and Open Signal, a community media center in Portland, where we record our show.
Please remember to go on, rate and review the show. It helps us out, helps people find the show.
Yeah, and of course, we put out a show every week, but we are taking next week down.
It is Thanksgiving.
Yes, in just like the Office show.
There is no Thanksgiving
episode.
We
will not be having a Thanksgiving episode, but we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
We will. We'll miss you guys.
Yeah.
See you next time.
Pippity Poppy, give me the zapper.
Yes, sir.
Blood alone moves the wheels of history.
Have you ever asked yourselves in an hour of meditation, which everyone finds during the day, how long we have been striving for greatness? Not only the years we've been at war, the war of work, but from the moment, as a child, when we realized that the world could be conquered. It has been a lifetime struggle. A never-ending fight, I say to you, and you will understand that it is a privilege to fight. We are warriors!
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.